Thank you, Van. The first time I heard that song, it was performed by Peter Meyer. Yeah, in Colorado, and he was actually was a guest musician at our church, so he would be proud. Good job. Good job. As our granddaughter says, good job. If any of you have been out driving around in the last few days, you'll notice that traffic is increasing on our streets. And although I consider myself an incredibly patient man, I have a significant intolerance for people who don't use their turn signals. So the other day we were driving along and I was ranting and raving about someone not using their turn signals, and my lovely wife encouraged me just to relax and to calm down. That reminds me of a story. I miss hearing you groan when I say that. It's just not the same. Anyway, this guy went to his psychiatrist, and he said, "Doc, I'm just really, really upset. I keep thinking these things, and I can't get away from them. I'm a wigwam. I'm a teepee. I'm a wigwam. I'm a teepee. I'm a wigwam. I'm a teepee." And the doctor said, "Well, that's very easy to diagnose. It's simple. You're too tense." So now the code word for settle down in the car and don't worry about those people not using their turn signals is, "Lawrence, you're a little too tense there, huh?" As Bev mentioned to you, this month is about curiosity. We've looked at it from different directions. And as I was doing research for this, I came across a book called The Perennial Philosophy that I had read many, many years ago. I hadn't looked at it in a long time. It was written by a British philosopher and author named Aldous Huxley. The two books he's most known for are a science fiction book called Brave New World, and the book that is certainly not fiction, it is nonfiction philosophy, called The Perennial Philosophy. He did an incredible amount of research in writing this book. He went back 2,500 years looking in the literature of the time, finding information resources for this book. And the book is about this body of information, the body of questions that seem to cut across all time. It cuts across all cultures. It cuts across all religions. We see these questions, certain questions, showing up over and over and over all down through history. As I said, back as far as 2,500 years and probably before that, but that's where he started with it. And he found this group of information. It reminds me a lot of the archetypes that I've talked about. Archetypes are images and ideas and concepts and beliefs that are eternal, basically. They cut across time and across culture, just like these perennial questions do. And some of the things that this book that he wrote has 27 chapters in it. And some of the topics, some of these perennial issues, are the nature of the ground of being, personality, sanctity, and divine incarnation, God in the world, truth, self-knowledge, grace and free will, good and evil, time and eternity, silence, prayer, faith. And it goes right on down the list. I'm not going to read it all to you. But these are things that come up in the thinking of humankind, in the philosophy, in the theology, in the psychology, all down through the ages, across the centuries, across the millennia, actually. And as I was looking at this book again and started reading it, and I'll tell you this, if you ever get to thinking you're pretty smart, you know, and you know a lot of stuff, just get The Perennial Philosophy and start reading it. And you'll find out how much you do not know, how many words are unfamiliar to you. That's what happened to me all over again. So when I was reading it, I was thinking, now why is it that this philosophy is perennial? Why is it that it lasts forever? Why is it that it goes on and on and on? Why are these questions asked over and over again? Why don't we ask the question, answer the questions, and get on to something else? But these same issues seem to come up over and over and over again, as I said, across time, across culture, across all kinds of beliefs. Why is that? And I was thinking, well, is humankind just too stupid to answer the questions? Are they too lazy to answer the questions and the questions just hang around? And the more I thought about that, I thought, well, maybe I should get off my high horse here and let go of some of the judgment I'm holding here and look at this more closely. And what I discovered as I really thought about it and continued to do my own research around this idea, what I found is that the questions have been answered, But what happens is the next generation looks at those answers and says, those answers are not good enough. Those answers aren't enough. So we've got to ask the question again and answer the question again. So the process goes on and on and on. And you're familiar with the term baby boomers. You probably heard that. Now, this is a category that sociologists put together for the purposes of studying and researching and predicting the behavior of different generations. The baby boomers are those born from 1965 to 1979. Gen X is the next one, 75 to 85. Then Gen Y, which are most often called for some reason the millennials, from 80 to 94. And then Generations Z, from 95 to 2012. Now, these years are not absolute. It's not a clear-cut line. There's a range in there, and they overlap. But it gives sociologists and others who study human culture and human behavior a framework in which to study, because these generations have different ideas. They have different things that are important to them. The baby boomers coming out of the war years have a different philosophy than the next generation that came along, that were seeing things differently and seeing what is important to them as different. Then the next generation came along and all the electronics came along, and they're so much more focused on that sort of thing. So you can see that each generation has its own sense, its own focus. So with these perennial questions that are in human consciousness, each generation looks at them in a little bit of a different way. So it's not the fact that the questions don't get answered. It's the fact that the questions need to be answered again in a different way, in a deeper level, in a different direction. So that's part of what we are about here with ourselves, is looking at these perennial questions. And they're there, whether they're brought to your attention that often or not. They are still there, and we deal with them in everyday life. So one of the things I'm going to be doing is that next month, our emphasis is well-being. And one way of dealing with well-being is I'm going to use this framework of the perennial philosophy and look at these ideas, these images, these questions that we have in a deeper way, as we can do. So what I want to encourage, there are three things I'd like to encourage you to do. One of these things is to study everything. Read, listen, talk to people, and look at things, all the systems of thought. Now, we are basically, Bev and I both are very, very devoted to Charles Fillmore and Myrtle Fillmore and their writings, their presentations, and that gives us a lot of information to work with. But even with Charles and Myrtle, they were people of their time. And there's some things about science that aren't quite accurate anymore. And Bev has been doing her preparations for the 12 Powers class, so I've heard a lot of, back from the office when something comes up from Charles Fillmore that's just really off the wall for our time now. But there's still some really great metaphysics in all of that. So what I encourage you to do is study everything. Study unity stuff, and then study things that aren't unity. Study stuff that's completely diametrically opposed to what you believe, just to be exposed to it, to give you another point of reference, a place to begin from. When I was in college, I worked as a lab tech in the plant pathology department. And the director of our department was this guy. He looked like an old farmer, looked like he'd just come in out of the field, but he was a brilliant plant pathologist. But on the wall up above his desk was a handwritten card, and I can't remember the Latin words, but the translation was, "Began with the known and moved to the unknown." And that was part of what guided his research as he was working. And I think that is important for us too, if we begin with the known. So let's start with what we know. Let's start with what we can see, what we can read, what we can put in some kind of understanding for ourselves. Study unity material. Study other people who believe differently. One of the things that you get here, you'll get a solid grounding in Fillmorian metaphysics, but you also get exposed to a lot of other things as well. During Power Hour that our licensed unity teacher Cynthia teaches, we use contemporary books. We do a lot of science in the Power Hour time, a lot of modern up-to-date books that are happening right here, right now, and a lot of authors who are on top of the latest information, the latest research. So you get that, again, as a point of reference. On Tuesday nights, we have classes that span the stretch from unity metaphysics to other things that are more contemporary. So you have the opportunity here. We do our best to expose you to all of those things, and I encourage you to take advantage of those things. As these perennial questions come up about God and the world, about faith, about love, about grace, about mercy, all of those things, use those opportunities to study those things, to learn about those things, and to gather what is there. Now, what happens very often when there's a long-standing tradition, there's a tradition that gets built around it. Very often an organization gets built around it, and structures get built around it. And sometimes we become, almost said slaves, that's a little bit too strong of a word, but we become devotees of these organizations and these institutions. And whatever the institution says, that's what we believe, that's where we are. And that's what gets old to these successive generations. That's why the baby boomers moved away from church. And that's why the next generation moved even further away, because they were getting the answers, the pat answers that come from the organizations, the pat answers that come from the institutions, from the longstanding traditions. And it's not sufficient to address the elevating, rising, expanding consciousness of that next generation that comes along. So here we are. We have the opportunity to expose ourselves to all of this other information besides what's right in front of us. So the first thing I would say to you is learn everything you can about this perennial philosophy and these perennial questions. Do it for yourself. The second thing is kick in your curiosity. Begin asking questions. When you study something and it says this about love, then allow your curiosity to say, well, what if that's not true? What if something else is true about love? What if there's something else about love that nobody has thought yet, that nobody has said yet, that nobody has written about yet? What if that's a possibility? One idea that's in the perennial philosophy is that of grace. That's something, that's an old traditional Christianity term that we don't use very much anymore. So what if you see that in a reading somewhere, a writing, and you say to yourself, well, what if grace is no more? What if grace has no application whatsoever to whatever it is that we're believing? Well, let's take grace out of the picture and see how it looks. If you've worked any kind of math equation, you realize you change one part of the equation, you change the whole thing. So if we change what we're thinking about, if we change what we're believing, if we change what we're talking about, if we change what we're building our life on, in one way it changes all of it. What if we did that? Allow your curiosity to pursue that. Now, what if this is true? Bev and I often joke about some of the things that we talk about, and I will often say that if the Catholics are right, I'm in really big trouble. So allow your curiosity to do that, to say, what if this is completely wrong? What if this is completely backwards? What if the opposite is true of what I've always been told? Ask those questions. There's no problem with asking the questions. There's no problem with wondering, what about this? What about that? It's a good thing to do. It's a growth experience for you. So especially when you're pursuing this perennial philosophy that's all around you and in you, ask those questions and wonder about those things. Now, the third thing I would say, in addition to learning everything you can about the perennial questions and allowing your curiosity to kick in, the third thing is come to your own conclusions. Come to your own conclusions. After you look at everything you know, then say, what makes the most sense out of all of this? That's what I do for myself. In my own personal credo, in my own personal perspective, is say, here's everything I know at this point. And I always go back to Papa Charlie's quote, you know, I reserve the right to change my mind. And obviously he did, because if you read one of these books from cover to cover, you may be hearing something slightly or significantly different at the end of the book than you did at the first, because his consciousness was unfolding. And I like to think I'm able to do that as well, that when I see what's out here and say, at this current stage of my consciousness, this is what makes most sense about everything that I believe, so here I am. And it may be that what I come to, the answer that I come to, the perspective I come to, is different than what anybody else has ever had, or anybody else who would want to agree with me. It may be different, and that's okay. We have come to a place in our consciousness, in the evolving consciousness of humankind, where we can trust ourselves. We don't have to have an organization. We don't have to have an institution. We don't have to have tradition to tell us whether we're right or wrong. Our heart tells us. So when we look at all the information we have, we can say, this makes the most sense, and here I am, right here, right now. You remember Jesus said that the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. And I'll say to you that this body of information we have is made for us and not us for the information. Then we take what we know and we shape that into a belief form for ourselves, and we don't have to shape ourselves into what that belief looks like. That's the power we have. That's the authority we have. And that's what we're called to do. As we continue to evolve in consciousness, we are at the next wave of consciousness, which means that the perennial questions need to be answered again. They need to be addressed again. They need to be looked at with a fresh perspective and be able to say, for this time, after having had all of these experiences through history, at this time, this is what makes most sense about answering these questions. And at this time, this question is really not relevant to us at all. And this question, which has been neglected for centuries, suddenly becomes very important for us. That's what we get to decide. That's what we get to do. And one of the wonderful things about unity is we can gather and share what we believe, and it's okay. We may have a group of, it's always interesting when we have class, we sometimes have as many as 35 people in class. And the teacher will make a statement, and about 12 hands go up. And you've got 12 different perspectives on that one particular issue, and that's wonderful. Because nobody is right and nobody is wrong. We are together in this. We are sharing this journey. So I'll be bringing back to you over and over again over the next month this idea of the perennial philosophy, these perennial questions that get asked. And let's see if we together can answer those questions again for our culture, for our time, for our generation, for our place right here, right now. And whatever it is that you decide for yourself, it's what works for you, and that's good. I was going to say one more thing. That's what I was going to say. I was going to encourage you that in the midst of all that we're learning and all that we're experiencing, to wade out in the deep water, and we'll do that together. God bless you, my friends.
Well, we certainly have a lot to think about, as there are many questions that come up now for us. How do we be a healthy community that cares for each and every one of us in these diverse times and in these unsettled times? So we have lots to ponder this week, and then as we get into June, we'll take that even deeper. I wanted to give a special thanks, though, for those of you who are committed to Unity of Pompano Beach, because you have kept our spiritual community thriving. We've cut way back on our expenses, and we have cut back on any kind of purchasing supplies. I've even cut the office off of ordering reams of paper. We have one left, and that'll sustain us. So we thank you because you have continued your giving. Those of you who have been able to give, I see you giving. And I see the giving that comes in every week from pressing that donate button. There are many ways to give. We certainly want you to use smile.amazon.com when you shop online, because that doesn't cost you anything. And Amazon has a program where they give charitable organizations a small portion of your purchases. So we continue to get little spots of money. Somebody of you was shopping last month because we got $5.12, I want you to know. So thank you for your shopping. It continues to be a little bit, and every little bit helps, as you know, from your own personal finances. We also have many other ways to give. The donate button, of course, enables you to give by credit card, debit card, or even your banking, e-checking with ACH. We also have people amongst you who set yourself up with a recurring payment. That really makes it easy. And through your own bill pay and your own checking account, there's no cost to you there either. They put that check in the mail. So thanks to those of you that are coming to mind now that I know do that. And as I'm thinking of checks coming into the office, it's such a treat when we get a card that gives a little bit of a snippet of what you're thinking and how you're feeling. So Anne and Victoria, Louise, Jim, Dawn, Peter, there's others of you as well. Thank you for those notes. We love hearing from each and every one of you. So won't you consider how you can give to Unity of Pompano Beach, but also when you're out and about or at home, making phone calls, coming in on the Zoom meetings to add your face to the gallery and your comments to the discussion, and just being that friend, that neighbor, that relative that you've thought you'd never had time to be, now's the time. So won't you hold your gift in your hand if you have something tangible, and whatever you plan to give or have given, hold that idea in your hand as if it's real, because it is real. Every thought is real. Divine love flowing through each and every one of us. May we be blessed in what we receive, and may we give outwardly all that we have. And so it is. Amen.